Welcome to The Independent. I'm Matt Fortuna, joined as always by Pete Sampson. Back home after taking in a 56-3 Notre Dame home opening win over Tennessee State. Pete, you're home now. You were in the stands there. You were in the postgame press conference, I believe, as well. How you feeling? What was a little bit less hectic than going to Dublin and London and everywhere else your travels took you last week? But what was it like week one at home?
It was, pretty straightforward today. You know, it's like when you sort of gamble on these stories of like, you know, watching from the stands and writing about Marcus Freeman watching the game opposed to just the game itself. You need those games to go exactly like it went today. So it was kind of businesslike for Notre Dame today. I thought the crowd was good. You know, they announced it as a sellout. I wouldn't say it was like jammed packed in there. But it was a good environment. And, you know, Notre Dame at this point, you know, Sam Hartman is 7 total touchdowns and 7 total incompletions through 2 games. That there's definitely like kind of this train leaving the station on the Hartman mania hype stuff happening. Like, he's aware of it. Freeman's aware of it. You know, he gets questions about how great Hartman is, and you see him just sort of like look at the ceiling and go, God, I don't want to. You know, he's pretty good.
Hartman or Freeman? Freeman is. Okay.
Freeman, yeah. It's like he doesn't want to get too into it, but it's been a while since Notre Dame has had sort of like almost like a rock star quarterback. I don't know if you saw his signaling from the sidelines. I'll have to send you the tweet video of it later. He's having a good time. I think that Sam Hartman, he doesn't really seem to take himself very seriously at all, which is kind of a breath of fresh air around here because Notre Dame is a place that takes itself pretty seriously. But, you know, even there was a moment in the fourth quarter where the video board found him on the sidelines and they flashed a stat line of, you know, 14 to 17 for 190, whatever, and 3 total touchdowns. And the student body sort of goes nuts for him. And like, you see Hartman sort of like duck behind Gino Guidulli to sort of hide and try to get off camera a little bit. But Sam Hartman seems to be enjoying the Sam Hartman experience at Notre Dame right now. And like, isn't this like one of the reasons you come to Notre Dame in the first place? You want to be developed into a more well-rounded pro prospect, but like, you're getting the big school experience if you're Sam Hartman in a way that Wake Forest was never going to offer, never could offer you. So Sam Hartman's enjoying the ride right now. It'll be interesting to sort of see what exactly we've learned about Notre Dame that carries into week two when they go to week two, game three. We're going to have to cut that out. But, you know, he's played in Raleigh before, twice, lost twice. He threw 3 picks when they played there last year. So it was interesting to sort of hear some post-game questions about, like, looking ahead to Iowa State or USC or Clemson. And, you know, one, Notre Dame lost to Marshall and Stanford last year, so they have not earned the right to sort of get ahead of themselves. But I think even Hartman is just, like, his personal experience, like, going to NC State is a tough game. That's a big game when you're at Wake Forest where – you know, you might have less material to work with, but I think Notre Dame probably goes into the Wake Forest or the NC State game feeling confident, but I don't think this is a team that's going to like get ahead of itself quite yet.
I just went back to look at the recent history between those two teams, because when you said he lost on the road twice there, I wasn't sure if that was accurate. It was, but the 21 and 20 NC State Wake games both had final scores of 45-42. With the home team winning each one. So maybe we'll be in for a barn burner next week at Raleigh. It would be very NC State, and I think we all know what that means by this point because we kind of have the book on Dave Doran after 10 years there, where I guess 11 years now, where they struggle on the road with UConn for a while, and then they come up and play up to their level of competition, and I don't think they're going to win next week, but, you know, give Notre Dame a really good game and give them a scare. We'll see. To your point, I mean, I don't think Notre Dame's in danger of overlooking anyone ahead of Ohio State. If anything, Ohio State might have been overlooking Indiana today based on the way they played, you know, in their opener today. It was, you know, like a lot of things in week one college football, there was a lot of upsets and a lot of things that made you, you know, just go, wow, like, we got to keep an eye on that the rest of the season. I'll say, if I was a 6-year senior in college, I'd be not taking life too seriously myself, I think. I'm just saying, I did make it out in 4. But Pete, I gotta say, having a good quarterback, going to the transfer portal, and probably having some NIL there. I mean, this is the way to win in college football in 2023. Who would have ever thought that? I mean, we've only been saying that for ever, or as long as NIL's existed, which is 2 years. But it's glad to see Notre Dame go that route. And early on, at least, they seem to be reaping the benefits of it. You are pretty strategic about picking out these games. Now, I'm glad, again, you didn't do Marshall or Stanford last year, but, you know, picking games you think will be blowouts, watching from the crowd, and again, to take in the experience differently, it does make life easier when you're not keeping play-by-play and worried about covering a loss or a close game. But I will say, like, early on, like, not that Notre Dame was ever in jeopardy of losing. It's 7-3, and Tennessee State has the ball in the red zone. And I think it was 3rd and 3, and it's like, okay, like, we've already got a better game on our hands this week than we did last week. A blocked field goal quickly stomped out that, and that was as close as Tennessee State got the rest of the way.
Yeah, it's the other game where I watched in the stands was Georgia Tech. It was 55-0, so that's, I think, 111-3 aggregate score between the two games that I've watched from the stands. Marcus Freeman after the game talked about how Tennessee State came out with some different stuff offensively and defensively than they had really prepared for. I think it just happens everywhere to anyone this early in the season when there's, you know, you're trying to put in some new stuff that will become less of a thing the farther the season goes. But it was interesting to sort of be in row 4. I think it was like on the 36-yard line on the Notre Dame bench and to sort of see Freeman interact with the DBs after a pick, or, you know, with Marty Biagi, the special teams coach, there's a lot of conversation back and forth there, or even his relationship with Hartman, that I asked Hartman about afterwards. And he said, it's, you know, sometimes it's head coach player and sometimes it feels like older brother, younger brother, because Hartman's 24 years old, Freeman's 37. So they're not that different in age. And it's the amount of, I think, interaction that Hartman and Freeman have, I thought was interesting because, like, what is Marcus Freeman going to tell Sam Hartman about playing quarterback? Like, the guy's thrown for 13,000 yards and 116 touchdowns now. Like, I don't think Marcus Freeman's probably going to have a whole lot of strategy to offer there, but I do think they work well together because, I mean, you think about the end of the first half, there was a moment where Tennessee State's driving, they have the ball, I think, like around the 10-yard line, less than 2 minutes to go, and Freeman's calling his timeouts because he wants to say, like, all right, you know, what can we do something with this if we get the ball back? And, you know, there are two older gentlemen behind me who I think listened to our podcast based on my conversations later. I'm back, and I won't reveal their names, but, like, I heard them being like, why is he using timeouts here? This doesn't, like, what is he doing? This doesn't make any sense. You know, and they, lo and behold, Nernan gets the ball back with 54 seconds left, one timeout. Hartman goes 6 of 6 for 80 yards. Boom, boom, boom. They go down the field. Touchdown. The game was already over, but it was really over at that point. And, I mean, I realize that Tennessee State is, like, maybe one of the worst teams to ever come into Notre Dame Stadium to play Notre Dame. But to have the confidence in your quarterback that he needs one timeout, which they didn't even use, and he can drive 80 yards in a minute to score a touchdown, like, when's the last time Notre Dame would – even banked on that as a possibility? It's been a long time. I just think Hartman's sort of approach and talent and experience, and the game feels so slow to him. You know, he can flip into the end zone, no problem. That just sort of changes the vibe and the tenor around the whole program. So, you know, it's like even Jason Onyeka, who blocked the field goal, was asked about, like, what's the Sam Hartman effect on the program after the game? Like, Notre Dame hasn't had a quarterback that would impact how the defensive line felt about itself in what, like, that's Brady Quinn stuff, right? Like, that's the last time that I think the defensive line would have sort of that kind of vibe around whoever was playing quarterback.
You know, it was interesting to see them take that approach. It was refreshing to take that approach because you don't see that often. And let's face it, like, there were benefits to that. Like, we could play the left game all we want, but, like, Notre Dame doesn't score that last touchdown right before the half, after doing all the legwork to get there with the timeouts and whatnot. Do you think Sam Hartman comes out for the second half for one more series?
Probably,
you know what I mean?
Does.
Like,
yeah,
right. And so, does. You know, what we want to see going into this game? More of the same on both sides of the ball from what you saw at Navy. You know, get Hartman more rest, so to speak, and see what you have from not just the backups, but the third teamers. But by the end of the game, you got to see Kenny Minchie a little bit. I got to see Sam Asaf and, you know, a couple other guys you don't normally see get on the field there. So that was positive. And I think it speaks to the mature approach that you can take when you have a quarterback like that. I mean, when you were asking, you know, what would Marcus Freeman have to share with Sam Hartman about playing quarterback? Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. And yet I look at it like, I want to be careful not to label Marcus Freeman a superstar coach because he hasn't done anything yet. He's only in his second year, but like he's a celebrity coach. Like he walks around campus, he gets stopped on campus. He's the guy who's going to take a picture with you. He's at the other sporting events. He's not there to be seen and whatnot, but he is there and he's seen a lot. Everywhere he goes is a Twitter photo somewhere. And Hartman, not there yet, but he's the closest Notre Dame's had at quarterback since Brady Quinn, since anyone probably since Manti Te'o. And I just think, to your point, when you talk about, you know, why'd you come to Notre Dame, you get that spotlight and experience you probably didn't get at Wake Forest. You get to you know, spread your brand, so to speak, a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. Who better to have in your corner than Marcus Freeman, a guy who probably learned some really good and really not so good lessons last year just as a first-year coach who was so beloved by this fan base. So I think that helps a lot, and I think that's, you know, where the Freeman effect, so to speak, comes in. Not that Brian Kelly hasn't seen stuff because he's coached forever and he certainly has, but he's not going to tell you how to navigate walking around campus because I couldn't tell you the last time Brian Kelly walked around campus or was anywhere to be seen outside of the Goog or the practice or game field. So it's a unique dynamic. It's an interesting dynamic. It's one I think we are seeing more and more in college football, and I'm curious to see how that relationship / kind of just dynamic, you know, carries on throughout the course of the season, especially when he doesn't play well, because everyone has bad games, and whether you win them or lose them, you know, there's hard coaching and lessons that come out of that.
Yeah, I mean, when I asked Hartman about that, the last bit of this question is sort of an interesting point. He says, you know, he was talking about the relationship. He says, it's something that I cherish and value a lot and appreciate his mentorship and his ability to kind of do what he does in the spotlight he has and handle everything that's thrown at him like a pro. And I think that sort of gets to your point there, that Hartman sees how his head coach handles this and like he's going to have to handle some of these things himself. And I know he's not the head coach, but I think he's going to have to get more comfortable with being uncomfortable in terms of the media spotlight, because it's not going away. It's just going to get ramped up. You know, whether you're sitting down with NBC every week and not just sometimes, or, you know, coming in for Tuesday media stuff and not just doing post game only. I think that's going to be important because, like, look, he is one hell of a brand ambassador for Notre Dame right now. This is who Notre Dame wants to be out there. You know, he's dropping NIL stuff during the week with clothing companies. It's, I don't think he can be overexposed, especially because he's only going to be here for what, 3 more months. You know, it's a short-term thing. Maybe I would feel differently if he was a sophomore. This was a one season rental. I think you got to maximize everything that you can. If you're Hartman, if you're Freeman, if you're Notre Dame with like, hey, we've got this good looking quarterback with a great beard and some personality, like, let it show off a little bit. Because I mean, I can tell you sitting with my kids at the game, like they think Sam Hartman is incredible. Tate wanted to see if, you know, we could go to Roars at the Morris Inn after the game. And could I invite Sam Hartman to come with us? Like this is
Tate, like let's get him on the podcast first, Tate. All right. Where are your priorities?
There's a little bit of a gravitational pull that this guy has, and it's real, and I think Notre Dame should lean into it as much as possible. Because look, it's not what's the oldest of the old school counter arguments is like, well, you know, you want locker room dynamics and like no one's bigger than the team. Like, yep, no, Sam Hartman.
The quarterback needs to be. I'm sorry.
Like, yeah, that's like we've come a long way from last year when Tyler Reese and Marcus Freeman would say, well, we just want Drew Pine to be 1/11th of the offense. Like that's a losing proposition 10 times out of 10. If you have a good team, your quarterback is the biggest player and handles the spotlight the best, and you lean into it. You have to be a coach on the field, not 1/11th of the offense. And the way you see Sam Hartman play quarterback, man, it looks like, I probably have said this before, maybe even on this podcast, it looks like the game speed is he's found the podcast setting and turned it down to 0.75, and everyone else is playing at 1.5. It just looks so slow to him, and everyone else is just flying around like they barely know what they're doing.
It'll be interesting to see that dynamic at play this week as he goes in. I mean, Notre Dame, I don't think has played NC State since that Hurricane game in 2016. I mean, that
No.
was a lifetime ago in some cases. And Hartman played there every other year and has had some good experiences there and some not so good experiences. And I'm curious to see where that, not leadership, but just that kind of like, I've been here and done that kind of mantra, how it shows itself in the locker room and on the practice field this week, because that's going to be an electric environment. You know, NC State is going to get up for that game. Those fans are going to get up for that game. But no, certainly the 1/11 thing, I always laugh when I hear it because that was Jim Tressel's go-to line. As we all know, Marcus Freeman is nothing if not a disciple of Jim Tressel. And look, Drew Pine was technically a backup last year who got thrown into the fire due to injury, and they didn't want to ask too much of him. But you know, to your point, I mean, it's, you don't want to be just, I mean, you want to be one of the guys, but you got to be more than just one of the guys if you're an elite
Yeah, it
quarterback.
just
If you're
doesn't
going
work.
to take, unless you're Georgia, right? And even then, Stetson Bennett ended up becoming a Heisman finalist. Like, you've got to be the alpha. You just have to. And, you know, they have that right now in a way that you covered Brady Quinn. I didn't. And I know what a madhouse that was. You know, it's funny. You know
Yeah.
what crystallized for me? What, how big Brady Quinn was. And again, like, I was a high school kid surrounded by a lot of Irish fans who were happy to have them quote unquote back. And Brady Quinn was a Heisman finalist and yada, yada, yada. I remember one of my first years on campus covering Notre Dame. I went to a women's basketball media day. And it was during the Skylar Diggins hype. And I remember sitting with Muffet McGraw. And she's like, I've never, Brady Quinn's the only comparison we have for this on this campus where like you can't even go to the cafeteria without getting stopped. Which again
Yep.
is different for Notre Dame, right? Like in the sense of everyone's supposed, you know,
That
they
athletes are
all,
going to the
yeah, well, yeah,
cafeteria.
that they're all just regular students together and live together and yada
Yeah.
yada yada. But like, yeah, I don't Manti, certainly throughout that season, but that kind of came out of nowhere. He was a very good player, obviously, but he rose to superstar status that year. But even then, it's different when it's a quarterback. It just is.
Yep.
There's no way around it.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
As a friend and your co-host, let me tell you about the exclusive clothier of Notre Dame football, ESQ. ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, Marcus Freeman, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit.
A couple other takeaways from the game today, like Notre Dame, as you would in a game that's 56-3. Played a lot of freshmen. I think 17 got into the game. Two of them scored touchdown, or one of them scored touchdown. Jeremiah Love, Rico Flores also had the first catch of the game, second of his career. But it's when the rubber hits the road this week at NC State, I will be fascinated to see like how much does the staff actually trust these guys.
The freshman, you
Like
mean?
the freshmen, because I think they trust them a lot. Great House and Flores in particular. Like, how do the carries shake out next week? Can you do? Is this where you've been? Have you been saving Audric Estime for this kind of a game? I would assume yes. Where you're going to do less with Love, or you know, Jadarian Price scored another touchdown today, this time receiving. But you know, it was the second half against Tennessee State. You know, I have been struck by how deep Notre Dame appears to be for the first couple of weeks, but I do think once you go to NC State, you'll know how deep Notre Dame actually is. That is one part about like the first start of the season that I think we'll get be proven either true or false next week in Raleigh. But so far, so good. I mean, so far, I would look at the freshman class and say, like, they've got quite a few hits at the offensive skill positions. Defense, I really don't know yet. But on the offensive side of the ball, it looks like they did a pretty nice job with that class in terms of how it's contributing early.
That's the beauty of this early season schedule is when you do put these guys in next week, they're not going to be blinded by playing a college football game for the first time. Obviously, the lights will be brighter, and I don't know if they will be brighter, actually. I mean, Dublin national TV is pretty big on its own. The competition will be better. But again, you're not like, all right, can I put this guy in a game yet? We've already seen him in a game. I think ripping that Band-Aid off and living to tell about it is a good luxury to have right now. It's what a lot of teams in a conference do with non-conference games lean up to it. I will say this, because I'm coming to you live from Town Place Suites on TCU's campus. Dylan Edwards, I know you don't need him right now, Notre Dame fans, but holy cow, can that guy
fly. A six-headed monster.
Yeah, he had two very, very long touchdown catches, actually, at over 100 yards receiving and four touchdowns. Deion Sanders said afterward, I've got multiple guys who should be up for the Heisman right now. And I'm not even sure he was referring to Dylan Edwards as one of them, because his son threw for 500 yards and Travis Hunter did something today that I never thought I'd see ever again in a college football game, which is play 129 snaps on two sides of the ball. But that's why we love this sport, right? If the Deion Sanders experiment works, boy, are we going to have to look at everything different. Is everyone going to have to look at everything differently?
There's watching that game in the press box before I went down to sit in the stands, like, watching Dylan Edwards, like, he had elite sprinter speed coming out of high school. That doesn't always translate to college. And yet, he barely would have seen the field at Notre Dame this year. He would have gotten into the game today, but just barely. Like, maybe he replaces Devin Ford, the grad transfer they took from Penn State, and they don't take him. But, man, Maybe that's like a good testament to Notre Dame's depth. Like
we don't need him.
You don't need this guy who scored four touchdowns in his first college game and has elite speed, because you've got Jeremiah Love, who also has elite speed and is bigger. And I don't know if he's faster per se, but he's close. And he's much more of an all around running back than what Dylan Edwards is. But I don't know. Maybe that's the nod to the quality depth Notre Dame seems to have all of a sudden, because I do think Flores, Greathouse, and Love are all the real deal, and that will show itself next week at NC State. You know, as far as the other guys, that sort of remains to be seen.
Pete, did you get a sense, particularly just being, you know, in the stands and being around the fan base, the appreciation for the moment of playing in HBCU? You got to see the marching band closer than you would, you know, in the press box. I think I saw photos online of the women's basketball staff wearing hats that said TCUND, TSUND.
TSUND.
I'm at TCU. I'm getting my T's mixed up. Did you get a sense of appreciation, or was it kind of like, I mean, it's the first game, so people are excited, but was it like, why are we playing them?
No, I think for the most part, people got it. You know, and I do think it's not just playing it. Like, I think the FCS stuff people got over pretty quickly, and they were able to sort of get behind, like, oh, well, an HBCU is kind of a cool spotlight to share. And when the band, like, their band is elite, that was a good halftime show. And I think for the most part, the Notre Dame fan base stuck around to watch it, it's opposed to just like, either leaving because it was 35-3 or just getting in a concessions line. That was a cool part of the experience. Like, it was funny. I think in the fourth quarter, the TCU band was playing. I don't know what they were playing. But I do know, like, their halftime show involved, but like, it was Chaka Khan and I don't know what else I wrote it down. Well,
they were doing a 50th, Beyonce 50th year celebration Flash. Of hip hop, right?
Yeah,
I think.
Yep. Hip hop at 50. But during the fourth quarter, they're just playing, I don't know what, I think they were playing something by The Weeknd, which I didn't even know, but then my kids pointed it out.
You wouldn't get that kind of analysis in the press box.
No, you would not.
Old white writers.
Nope. But it was funny seeing, like, Notre Dame's players, like, sort of, like, vibing on the sideline to it. Like, they were enjoying it. And Jadarian Price came in for interviews afterwards, and you know, somebody asked him about the significance of playing at HBCU, and he said that he had some relatives who have graduated from an HBCU, not Tennessee State, a different one. And like, it was, it felt like a very mature, like, yeah, like Notre Dame has this huge spotlight, and it's cool that we get to share it with them. And so I think overall people got it. I know, look, from the quality of football, this was such a throwaway game that you barely need to write anything off of it or remember anything from it. And that's fine. Like, you wouldn't want to do this on the regular, on a regular basis. But I do think from an event standpoint and just sort of a historical significance standpoint, like, overall, I think the fan base seemed to get it, which I thought was cool. And I mean, that was sort of how Marcus Freeman started his post-game press conference. Just like, you got to take a moment to recognize this as like a, this is a cool event. Like, Friday night before the game, there was a panel on like the power of diversity, and like, it was Eddie George and Derek Mays and Neil Ivey, and Marcus Freeman was there. I don't know if he was on the panel, but he attended it. And so I think Notre Dame tried to get, you know, a little bit more mileage out of this than just like, hey, here's a football game that we won by a crap ton of points. That's all that matters. I think they saw like, okay, there's, you can have a little bit more to this than just football players playing football.
We wouldn't be the Independent if we didn't shout out the Vegas Lions and friends of the show, particularly Tim Murray, who alerted us this morning. There was, in fact, a line on this game.
I was shocked to see it was as high as it was. If I was a betting man, and I'm not, I would have taken TCU in the points.
TSU.
TSU in the points. Now you've got me all messed up, Mr. Forward.
It was it was 47.5. The over-under is 52. So Notre Dame is now 2-0 against the spread and 1-1 with the over-unders. If you found that line and had a proxy in Vegas to bet on it either way, God bless you. But hey, it's week one. Like, let's have some fun here. Let's get weird. Shout out to another friend of the show, Paul Burmeister, who not only did the broadcast, his wife, Ann West Burmeister, was inducted this week, and it was mentioned on the broadcast as well, into the Iowa Hawkeyes Athletics Hall of Fame for being a rower. So he's clearly the second best athlete in his family, despite being a Hawkeye quarterback himself.
And his son going to play lacrosse at Notre Dame next year.
I did not know that. Wow.
Maybe he's third.
So it's 2 weeks, two different NBC announcers for Notre Dame. They won't be back on. Is Central Michigan NBC or Peacock?
That is the Peacock only game.
Okay. Well, it'll be an NBC broadcast either way. We'll see who's on it then.
Yeah, but then we know, as I think we knew this, I don't know if you referenced it, but Todd Blackledge was on a podcast of Richard Deitch, who's at The Athletic, does a great job covering sports media. And Blackledge said, yeah, I'm calling the Notre Dame Ohio State game. So that's, it'll be a fourth different crew in four games in terms of NBC's coverage of Notre Dame this year, which is definitely a change of pace from how things have typically operated there for the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's like the benefits of Notre Dame having their own network is you have a consistent start time and broadcast team every week in a way that no other program in the country gets. Now, if you improve upon that every single week and change it up four or five times, you lose some of one and you maybe strengthen yourself elsewhere. I don't know. I wonder, I don't know if he got to this in the podcast or elsewhere. I wonder if they'll do their show from Notre Dame Stadium for that game, the way they're at Penn State right now.
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know the answer to that, but it's a Notre Dame game, but it's also a Big Ten game,
right?
And they have contracts with both, so I would think Notre Dame would welcome that. I don't know what other big games are that weekend. If like
it's going to be undefeated Colorado at undefeated Oregon. That's what is.
I feel like if you got undefeated Notre Dame, undefeated Ohio State, that might be the game they draw over Colorado Oregon.
You say that like. I would have laughed in your face.
You're going to be in Oregon for that.
I know, right? I was next to our old Notre Dame beat writer, Lakin Lippman, today, and she's coming out for Notre Dame Ohio State. And we both looked at each other jokingly after. We're like, we rebooked to Eugene for that week? This Colorado team, like the gift of the curse of playing as well as they did. Is like, we all came to this game thinking like, all right, it's a one-off. The hype train's over. Yep. They're going to lose to the national runner-ups, and that's that. They'll go back to being Colorado. Now it's like, no, they're probably going to smoke Nebraska next week in their home opener, and that'll be a big deal. Then they play Colorado State, and then they go to Oregon. And it's like, oh my God, like this is happening. Like there's the way they play and obviously the way they talk is, you know, just very attractive in and of itself. But the fact that they seem to be pretty good, I'm not convinced. I mean, especially if that's an ESPN game, I'm not sure if it is or not. That game day wouldn't go that way, especially since Fox got Coach Prime for each of the first 2 weeks. But that's what I love about week one and overreactions. We're already talking about where game day might go 3 weeks from now. And there are plenty of landmines for everyone between now and then. I'll let you close, Pete. This is, I think, the third time you've done this in the stands with your kids. Where, like, second?
Second time, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Georgia Tech, it was, you know,
Brian, I thought you Kelly's did BC last year for some reason. I don't know why I had
that. Heck no. My Tate went to that game, refused to wear his snow pants, and then they left in the first quarter. It was like 20 degrees. I think it was 20 degrees, but wind chill like pushing. It was like hot conditions. So
I
would have been in the stands for that one.
I'd say, I think you're lying. I think you didn't want to sit there anymore and said, Dad's going up to the press box where it's warm and left him out there. But heck, that's neither here nor there.
Heck no.
What's the biggest takeaway from the fan, particularly from the kid fan perspective? Where to eat? What's the most fun part outside of actual gameplay?
You know, I thought the walking taco was solid. They do a good job of that. I think that they were struck by the concession lines for the Georgia Tech game were really bad. They were very smooth today. So props to whoever's running that operation. Like there was, I think, went up and got a popcorn and it's like self-serve now. You just like run your credit card and grab the popcorn and go. Like it's a pretty good operation. At Notre Dame Stadium, it seemed like everyone was easy in and out. So yeah, overall, like concessions were good. That's always important. I believe that they have Chick-fil-A available. Tate was a big fan of that.
They've had that for a while. I would go get that sometimes on my own at halftime when
on top of the walking taco. So I think he was well fed today at the game. Was trying to get like I think a towel or gloves from a player. That didn't work out. He was a bit bummed about that, but I think we've all been to sporting events as kids where we think you're getting an autograph and you don't, and you're crestfallen. But that's part of the youth sporting experience. They had a good time. They're totally spoiled because those are not typically seats that you get down in the blue, beautiful people area.
From the man who hosted the diversity panel you referenced earlier.
Exactly. It was a nice place to be. So, they had a good time, good experience. And it's just like, look, I've been covering Notre Dame for 23 years. Saturdays, I really don't see them. So it was kind of fun to watch a game with them again. They're definitely, I can see two solid years of Notre Dame football experience wearing on them they seemed a little bit more aware of like what the heck was going on. And when I was trying to point something out to Tate, he's like, I already know that. Like, I'm like, okay.
I read Blue Gold Illustrated, Dad.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's what I do at lunch at school. He did see his friend Gino walking around. I don't know if they met Gino Freeman.
Oh, I thought you were the quarterback coach.
No, so that's and I think like pretty much every half the kids from his class were at the game in some capacity. So it was a good time. Like weather was great. Game was easy. Sam Hartman's beard is glorious. Like everyone likes Sam Hartman and what they saw today, from the senior citizen fans behind us who loved our podcast to my 13-year-old daughter and 10-year-old son. Everyone had a good time today.
Awesome. We'll end on that note. That's Pete. You can read him at The Athletic. I'm Matt. You can read me at The Inside Zone. Notre Dame 56-3 winners over Tennessee State in week one, game two. That's the last time we'll refer to them as different numbers. You can join us back midweek. We'll have a guest previewing the NC State game. And look for more. Please subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating if you're so inclined. Leave a nice comment. And you can download us on Apple, Spotify, now Google Podcasts as well, and wherever else you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks, as always, for listening to The Independent.